You're listening to a Toad Network production, putting heroes on trial because someone has to. Tired of the discourse and writer fandom? Looking for something to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Then look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX, Active Ingredients, Ayla, Amit, Claire, Gomez Q, Neji Rea, Professor What, Sona, The Imposter. Side effects may include Heiseiitis, Showa Fever, Helper Robotophobia, and an English Lilt. Welcome to this 78th episode of Uncommon Cast RX. The subject is Kamen Rider Gaim, episode 40, and today there are two of us discussing this interesting episode, I would say.
Interesting about covers it.
Yeah, it's me, Amit, and this guy over here is Jonathan, so say hello.
Except I'm not over there for you, dear listeners. I'm in the same room. Anyway, hey, we'll forgive the existentialism now. You'll understand why perhaps when we get to the end of the episode.
Yeah, especially because you just watched this a couple hours ago. Maybe your mind is still ringing.
Yeah, that probably... ringing, reverberating, some form of vibration. I don't really know. It just sort of happened. Anyway, we should probably get to discussing it rather than just making vague statements.
Well, actually, I will pause our, discussion and just ask you this before we continue, because I think it's been 4 episodes that you have not been available.
Yeah,
part of that
yeah,
was because
yeah.
You were away. I don't know how much you want to say about that. But I'm curious to know.
Yeah, I'll say a bit about that if you want. But go ask me the question, and then I'll
talk
about it.
Yeah, and then you can say what you need to say. I want to know what you've been thinking of the show so far, and if you saw it live, raw, anywhere.
Yes and no. I didn't see it live raw. I did see the summer movie live and raw, which was very interesting. At least a strange experience. Anyway, for listeners who don't know or who haven't kind of kept up or whatever, because I haven't really talked about it very much, I went to Japan for 3 weeks a couple of weeks ago and ended up doing a big tour of the country. So while I was there, I thought I had a free afternoon, so I went to the cinema to see the Takuja and Gaim summer movie, which was an odd experience watching something that I know I should understand but kind of not really understanding a lot of it. Although it's surprisingly easy to follow, actually, even without the subtitles. So, it was a very interesting experience. I still have my free gift that they gave me at the cinema, that it looks a bit weird giving it to me, being that I was probably one of the oldest people in the room. I had fun, so what's the point? I've watched the show kind of, I caught up with it. I watched about 4 episodes in an afternoon or something because I wanted to make sure I was up to date. And I think it's been getting better, I think, actually. I don't know, they seem to have a definite objective now, and kind of other problems with the world aside, in general it seems to be pretty okay, but I don't know, it seems that they're laying all their cards on the table too soon, I think is one of the problems. I don't know if they're going to be able to maintain this level of pace up until the 50th episode, if that's how far it's going to go. I mean, we've at least got 5 more episodes, if not more than that, after this one. So I really don't know whether they can maintain the level of threat and that kind of thing, because it actually has been pretty good. I think, 37 was the weird Kaito wants to be a footballer episode, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was sure. Yeah, that was a bit of an odd one. Can't say that I was much of a fan, but I think it makes a lot more sense when you watch the summer movie. When I heard you guys talking about it, I remember thinking that if you'd seen the summer movie, it would make more sense because it's kind of. But then the whole kind of alternate universe thing is played on a lot more in the summer movie, so I guess that probably is why they're kind of alluding to it, but it kind of not really explaining it because they're guessing that most kids will have seen it.
Now, does the alternate universe thing in the movie carry through actively? Are they like crisscrossing or hip hopping? Gosh,
essentially, what happens in the opening kind of 5 minutes of the summer movie is that you see kind of Kota walking around like a wrecked Zaume, and then he sees this kid who kind of takes him through a dimensional warp, and that's basically how. And then the summer movie happens in this kind of pocket universe. But whether the Kota that you see in the beginning is in the original world or whether he's in like that's a spin off of another world, that's not left very clear because there's no power ups or anything that really carry over. So it'll be hard to say whether. anything that happened there actually affected what happened, what, you know, because all the power-ups were either limited to other riders or, you know, not to him as such. So it will be hard to say whether it carried over or not.
Okay, and I guess that's a an Uncommon Cast RX exclusive scoop.
I've seen people posting spoilers. It was quite funny because I read the spoiler post after I'd seen the movie, and I was like, oh, that's what that was about. So it was kind of, it was quite an amusing kind of scene the second hand. But it probably isn't exclusive. People will see it when it comes out. I mean, I thought it was quite enjoyable, but I mean, it wasn't prosaic in any respect. Not like this episode was, or tried to be anyway. I thought it was quite fun, and I have been enjoying the show slightly more. There's certainly been times where I thought it was getting a lot better, and especially with the kind of the Riome Reliance and kind of trying to storm the castle. Like that was, they actually had an objective, and they weren't just sort of sitting around the city kind of pretending that the stakes aren't important, which was much better than what has been in the past.
Okay, and with that, I think we should move into our discussion of episode 40.
Yes.
Okay, so episode 40 is The Awakening, just Awakening as an Overlord. So why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay, well, this episode is very odd. That's the biggest thing that I'll say. It kind of has a Return of the Jedi vibe to it in some respects. I think that was one of the vibes I got, but then also kind of lots of kind of temptation-esque literature kind of comes into it. But I mean, you've all seen it, so you kind of all know the plot. But I think one of my things was a lot of the action sequences weren't particularly well done. They just seemed very flat and static, and I didn't think that was really kind of, they're jumping around all over the place, and they just seemed very, very flat. I don't know why that was, but it just didn't really kind of work for me in any respect. But I mean. But yeah, as I said, a kind of distinctly Star Wars-esque vibe I had in the episode, kind of with the whole sort of choosing between light and dark and that kind of aspect of it. But then, I don't know if that's a fair comparison. Maybe not.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because I'm almost always thinking of Star Wars and comparing it to things, and that did not occur to me at all. I felt very much like this was going in some weird religious areas, and
I thought that later on, and I was like, it's kind of Garden of Eden almost. I don't know, is it? It's hard to say now.
A mix between like the traditional understanding of the Garden of Eden, and then maybe the like the Mormon understanding, which is a little bit different. Like sin was a necessary thing in order to change the world and make it better, which kind of in some ways is related to actually the Orthodox Jewish view, like Satan or the adversary is more of an agent of God who tempts people, but only because, not because, you know, God wants people to sin, but because only through resisting temptation can like one's love for God and dedication be really shown. Is, you know, similar to Christianity, where Jesus is said to have been tempted in every way, like, you know, men and women were, but he just did it without sinning.
Let's get right to the meat of this, because, like, the way this is all set up with the kind of temptation aspect, I don't really think it works, because surely to be tempted, you have to have most of the facts in front of you, and then you make the conscious choice. It's not like The way that Sagara like presented this to Kota originally with taking the Kiwami Lockseed, he wasn't like what's his defense? Like Kota should have known that it would be that there will be consequences. I don't really see how that works.
Well,
like,
he thinly gave Kota a warning that there would be consequences, and Kota said he would accept them. Do you want to say a little more? Because I have something to add about that.
Like I just kind of thought that the way that Sagara sets the whole thing up, it's kind of like he's kind of I don't know whether it's a commentary on Kota being like, oh, maybe he should trust people less because that's a bad thing to believe in other people. I don't know. Like, is that what they're saying? It's really hard to tell. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
I hope that's not what they're saying.
No, I agree. No, I quite agree. But I was saying maybe that's a commentary on like, Because I think there is a point where Kota kind of, he does trust people to the nth degree, and that isn't perhaps the best thing in the world, because as has been proven with Michi, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of his downfall, that he refuses, even in the face of evidence, to believe that Michi is not everything he claims to be. And I think that's, I think there's a difference between like kind of that, between that and kind of don't trust people at all because they're all terrible. I think there's quite a fine line to be drawn. But I don't know. It just seemed the whole way they kind of set up the whole, like, oh, well, he's going to turn into a monster anyway. What seemed to be odd was that they weren't really kind of coming down on, is it literal or is this sort of a metaphor type thing? Is he going to become a tyrant? Is that what they're kind of hinting at? Or is it that he's going to actually become physically? I guess in Kamen Rider, it would be a sort of like, it would be more better to be physical because it's kind of makes more sense. But it would be but then the metaphor would be kind of still there in the background. I don't know. I was trying to come down on one side or the other, whether they were actually trying to say in terms of what the consequence would be.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. And before I expand upon the accepting consequence before fully knowing what they are, I would like to continue my blending of religions. So we've got Mormonism, like straight Christianity, and Orthodox Judaism, and their understandings of the fall. Well, yeah, you know, at least in America, there's Baptist and Methodist and everything.
Oh no, well, we have that in the UK too. No, that. Yeah. Well, I was just making a joke. Sorry.
Let's say Catholic. Christianity. Oh, okay, so it's right, universal.
Okay, fair enough. Right. Small C Catholic, I'm guessing you're meaning.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
See, and just for those who don't know, look it up, because it's something you should know, because it's good to know things. I also want to kind of add in that there's something of from Hinduism. You'll have to forgive some of my ignorance on this, but isn't Vishnu the six-armed god of destruction who destroys the world so it can be created anew?
My knowledge of Hinduism is sadly lacking also, so that that sounds right to me, but I'm probably wrong.
do you want to look that up while I'm talking about something
else
then?
Go for
okay.
it.
Okay. So my thinking is an example I want to bring up also from Judaism is that when the people of Israel came to Mount Sinai, God started speaking to them and said, hey, I want you guys to do this. He started laying out the Ten Commandments, among others, and then the people they were afraid because there was thunder and smoke and lightning and stuff, and it was just a daunting, overwhelming experience, and they were afraid that they would die. This is in the text. You can see in Deuteronomy, but also Exodus. You can go look it up, but they have Moses take on the rest of the Ten Commandments and what God has to reveal to them. But one thing, so they don't hear it themselves, they hear it from Moses after hearing a little bit from God, then becoming afraid. One of the things that they say before learning what everything is we will hear and we will obey. So they don't ask what his requirements are up front. They, because they're grateful for taking them out of Egypt, the land of slavery and all this stuff, they accept the responsibility or bind themselves to be obedient before knowing everything that God is going to ask and demand of them. So kind of similarly, you could say Kota does that, but the difference is that God is benevolent,
they have no reason to disbelieve or to believe that God is in any way gonna screw them over,
right? case of Sagara, we've kind of hinted at this and right away calling him a snake. Is Sagara supposed to be God, or is Sagara supposed to be like a Satan analog? How do you read that, John? You refuse?
But if he's no, right, if he's the devil, he's terrible at it. Right, that's the basic thing I come down to.
Please explain.
If he's fine. The devil is the master of temptation. Okay, that's the in the Judeo-Christian view, that's what he is. He knows exactly what is going to make you tempted, because that's how he works. So Sagara tries to tempt Kota with the promise of ultimate power and all these things, when all through the series he's proven to be the most selfless person that exists. Surely this is what you should be doing to Kaito, not to Kota.
Yeah.
Surely this is a case of like mistaken identity, if anything else. But it just seems if he is the devil, then he's doing a terrible job because he's tempting Kota with things that he should never be, that he has shown himself time and again to never be tempted by. I mean, when he takes the Kiwami Lock Seed, he doesn't do it because he wants ultimate power. He does it to save everybody else. So surely at that point, Zagor will go, perhaps me tempting him with ultimate power was a bad idea because actually he doesn't really care. You know, it just seems very odd that they're tempting Kota with something. It's as you said before, it's very odd they're tempting Kota with something that in reality he doesn't actually want that much. I don't know if it's like he's the one who has risen the highest as the first to fall or something stupid, you know, like that kind of thing. Where they're like, oh, if we can turn him, then you know, all hope is lost. I don't know, but it just seems like a very, very strange thing to try and tempt him with when he hasn't really shown any inclination towards that at all throughout the series as yet.
Yeah, that is a good point. Why don't you educate us on some Hinduism and then we'll continue moving through the notes.
I'm trying to be educated. It's like, as far as I can tell, I think Shiva is the one you were thinking of.
Okay.
So it's not Vishnu, but then since it's all kind of forms of God anyway,
you could argue it's all the same thing.
You could argue it's kind of the same thing. But from my very, very limited knowledge, I think Shiva is the destroyer or the recreator. So it's a kind of... But it's very hard to read all this at speed. I do apologize. I should probably not try and educate people. I should probably not try and like butcher an explanation of a religion I don't know anything about.
Because
I'm an expert of something that I'm not. But like, I'm really like just yeah.
Well, the strange thing to me was that right away, kind of was in the Kota position before, and he destroyed. I don't know, I'm confused. Did he create our world? You know what I'm saying?
Does anyone know anything? I don't like. It doesn't really. I don't know. I can't. This is what's really hard to tell because I thought Roshuo would have been the one who.
I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Roshuo.
Roshuo. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Pappy.
This is Pappy. Yeah. This is what doesn't make sense because. Presuming, I don't think it's that it creates the next world for Helheim to consume, or maybe I don't know. Maybe it is that powerful. It's very ambiguous. It's not very hard to say. So because in that case, then it's creating planets to perpetuate itself, and it's much more powerful than we've been led to believe thus far. It seems a very odd system that would have enough energy to create. It's more like it lacks purpose at that point because its only purpose is to create more things to sustain itself, but it's not really doing anything. It seems very pointless at that point. It's kind of a null system, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are theories. I don't know if they're still popular or not, but there are theories that the universe is eternal and it just... I mean, like, scientific theory that the universe is eternal and it just... is destroyed, collapses
expands
upon itself,
and
then reemerges over and over again. And then there's also, I want to say, and now I'm reading more into Hinduism, I'm pretty sure samsara is the cycle.
That sounds about right.
It's a cycle of, birth, life, and death, and reincarnation, all that stuff. And, like, it almost seems like Urbuchi's playing upon that. But I just don't know. And I think we're getting into dangerous territory. We should probably move back to the notes.
Yeah, probably.
Because we have well thought out things to say that are in our notes.
Well, you have well thought out things to say. I have ramblings, but you know, we'll go with that. Yeah. We have well thought out things to say, dear listeners.
All right. So I'll do a little more complaining and then I'll let you say what you have to say. So like.
I'll pretty agree with you. So yeah.
One of the things I thought was really dumb, was this weird spinning thing that Mr. Lemon Pants jumps in and is fighting with Kota and Redoue and they turn
into
a giant drill.
Why does he jump in? Why? He just sort of says, I want to talk to you, but maybe, and then transforms. You're like, no, you missed the end of the line there where you should have told us what you were doing. I agree. That effect was really silly. It was like... They needed a way to get them onto the roof without Kota having but if they'd given Kota the ability to teleport, then it'd be far more powerful. So you'd have to kind of there had to be some way for them to get there. It was just a really silly plot device, and it was just like, why is this here? It's just pointless.
Yeah, it was bad. And then the next thing, I have a slight praise for it. I like the seeds planted for Kota's transformation and how right away calls back to stuff from episodes ago, like Maya telling him to eat and him saying he's not hungry. That's neat.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, this is like, you know, well thought out storytelling, which is something of a seemingly a luxury these days. But I thought it was good that they are addressing these points, and I thought it was kind of getting to almost be hitting you over the head with foreshadowing in some respects. Like, is it like in the last couple episodes particularly? It's like every time Kota goes to eat, it's like, oh no, I don't want to, and like it wasn't. I wish they'd had some kind of some more physiological changes as well that were going on. He was trying to hide, maybe. I think that could have kind of added to it, but that might have made it a bit more obvious what was going on. I think it's interesting they're going down this route, but I don't know. I guess I do like this route, but I wonder if they're just going to kind of go, oh, and he did something, and therefore he's not an overlord anymore, and that's that. You know, yeah. I don't know if they're going to actually physically say, you know, you're going to get to this point or you're going to die. That's quite, you know, it's quite final, really. And I don't think for a long time they haven't been in the spirit of killing off riders, like main riders anyway, in the kind of finale and saying, you know, they're definitely dead.
Right.
But who knows? Perhaps we may see that. Who knows?
Yeah, we may, especially because there's other people in Salome who can carry the torch or whatever. You know, Robin. Yeah. Zach is his Robin.
Which is strange. Yeah, especially because now Kaito seems to be Mai's main love interest, like more so than Kota now.
Yeah, or like, something. It's kind of confusing.
Yeah, like it's kind of very strange.
Do you want to finish off your point about Sagura?
It's more just kind of saying what I've said before about kind of the temptation aspect. It just seems a bit kind of ill thought out on Sagura's part, but also it doesn't. I don't know. It kind of doesn't seem like it's not really like Kota's making a true choice. He's just kind of. It's like, oh, we've made this really contrived situation so that you'll fall to pieces. It doesn't really seem not fair to Kota, but it's not. It doesn't really seem legitimate in that sense. I don't know. But then I'm imposing my laws of fairness over a show that doesn't really seem to have many. So I guess that's probably not the greatest criticism I could have made. But it just, I don't know. There's something about how kind of his fall from grace doesn't really seem, if we as an audience are supposed to kind of think, oh, he's really gone over the edge, blah, 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 you know, and have less sympathy for him and kind of want him to come back to the side of good, in some respects, then this isn't the way to do it, because he's been forced into this situation. It's not the fact, you know, he's not like kind of been seduced by power or anything. He made a decision when they really needed extra power to defeat the Overlord. And Sagura said, you know, there'll be consequences, whatever. But it wasn't like he kind of went, oh, I just need the extra power because I want extra power. It was like, you know, it doesn't sit well with me from an audience perspective point of view, because you don't think, oh, how terrible it is he's gone over to the dark side, which is what they kind of seem to obviously want you to do, because obviously you want to root for the hero on the side of good. It just seems a very strange way to play it to the audience, I think.
Yeah, he seems more like a victim.
I
don't know, a weapon with a side effect that it hurts you, you know?
Yeah, which is kind of Showa-esque, I guess, in some respects. Kind of the power is... No, I guess the power didn't kill them. It was more that it was somewhat sacrificial.
Yeah, but I think not done in as good a way.
No, I would agree. Well, no, I mean, like in Deno with Zoronus, like that's a really good sacrifice thing. But,
right.
But like that's not this at all.
They're totally different. Okay, moving on ahead. Apparently, lemons make you invisible. I did not know that. I will start eating them.
Well, it has been joked that Gaim is just a propaganda machine for the Japanese health authorities to make you eat more fruit. Who knows? But like, the only thing I could think of was maybe it's an Invisible Ink joke.
Oh, because the citrus juice, right?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about. But I didn't. Okay. But like, that's all I thought. But it happened, and I kind of just went, well, he is a scientist, and he's souped up his Genesis driver, so I'll buy that. if Ian Turner was whatever, you know.
I just hope...
But... Sorry, go on. No.
I just hope that's not true, because if it is, that's really bad, because who's going to know that? And it's not like there's a hint in it. Not like he made a little quip so that kids will go look it up and learn something, but whatever.
No. I mean, that's the only thing I could possibly... That's the only connection between Lemons and Invisibility I could possibly think of, was that. Right. And I was like, and that was only after reading your comment. In the episode, I just kind of went... He's a scientist. He probably worked it out okay. Fine. It was the least of my problems in this episode, to be quite honest. Like, you know.
Right. All right. I guess now we're going to get into the real meat of the whole issue.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the trepidation face. This is obviously, this doesn't work in the medium of audio, but oh well.
Okay, so is this jibber jabber or heavy philosophical stuff?
They indistinguishable from the two? Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. All this talk about the one who creates a new world destroys the old one, and their power garners them fear and hatred. Let's discuss Google and Apple, the states, you know, the United Ones of America,
yeah.
Israel and God in these respects. What do you got? Early on, I talked about how, like, concentration of power
or influence is a bad thing.
Is a bad thing, and maybe what the show's about, but...
Yeah, because I guess the thing that seems odd about all these is that none of the people in it seem to have any faith in the humanity that they are not a part of. Because I mean, but that kind of makes sense, because I guess in some senses a lot of the overlords are kind of outcasts from humanity as a whole because they displayed, I don't know, extreme intelligence or, you know, extreme will to dominate for some of them. But then what it comes down to is a lot of them are like, oh, you'll have all this power, so all it will do is breed fear and resentment. And I was like, well, surely that comes down to how you exercise the power, not the fact that you have it in the first place. And, you know, you look at, like, Jesus, he was, well, you know, if you believe he existed, whatever, but, you know, he, from what we read, he was incredibly powerful, but that didn't mean people were instantly fearful of him. And if anything, that was, you know, people were drawn to him, but that was because of how he used the power he had. And it's the same with a lot of superheroes. You know, for some people, Superman is incredibly scary if you're a bad guy, but then he doesn't always exercise the power he has. So surely it's not about the fact that you have this power, it's the fact that it's the utilization of it that surely is the problem. And that's kind of that's what I find odd about it. They don't seem to make a distinction between having power and using it. And I think that's a really important distinction to make.
Yeah, that is a really good point. And my, you know, smattering you know, powerful entities that I brought up was like, you know, Google started out kind of anti-Microsoft and their motto was don't be evil. Mm. But now people say, oh, Google is evil because they're in bed with the NSA and whatever. They want all your data. They, you know, scan your emails and give you ads and things like that. And I don't know, I have a question about that. Really evil?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you... Well, it depends on what you think about things like, you know, privacy and that sort of thing. It's a bit of a straight, you know, like it all depends on your perspective. I mean, in some respects, they would say they were just making their services better for you by using the data that you've freely given to them and allowed them to use anyway.
Right.
So it's, you know, really they're just acting within the predefined boundaries that they have. I think talking about countries in that respect is quite different because they often act unilaterally and often with disrespect for other countries. To talk about business entities and national, you know, and countries in the same breath is a bit strange. And then to bring deities in as well, I mean, is that, I don't know.
No, I just, I mean, like, you know, these different things I bring up are all concentrations of power in different ways, you could say. Like, let me put it this way. Like, I like Google. I like privacy. I'm a bit of a privacy advocate, but I don't use Tor, you know, the Onion router, or encrypt a lot of my things.
Yeah,
I bought a new laptop and I happened to encrypt it because I put a Linux operating system on it, and I just thought, oh, it'll be fun, and I can encrypt it, and I'm not really worried about it.
Yeah.
And certain things that I want private, I keep private. But, like, you know, Google offers all these, you know, free services, and I freely utilize them, or I enjoy utilizing them. But, you know, a company like Apple, who is another big company who has a lot of power, I I actively don't like Apple. Like, I'm kind of an anti-Apple person.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they try to restrict your freedom in how you use their hardware and things like that. And, I mean, but the two companies offer different philosophies. Apple's very into presentation and, like, showmanship, and whereas Google, and about things being measured and things like that, whereas Google's kind of more free, like the Wild West, and
yeah.
when something rises to the top, that's seized upon and used for the next iteration going forward, and then it branches off, and then the best stuff is selected from that, and so on and so forth. But, you know, like, I don't see Apple as evil, but I think there are some people who say it's too big and too powerful, or and some people are against Google in the same ways, and like, they're related to governments and how they interact with them.
But I think it's the same. I think it comes down to the same point. I mean, the fact that Google and Apple have power because they make money, essentially. You know, that's what it comes down to. They have enormous capital bases, and that's kind of why where the power comes from. But surely it's not being big or being or having lots of money that makes them evil, I would argue. I think it's more, again, it's more down to, it's the difference between actions and, you know, what they choose to do with their wealth or their data or whatever. You know, I think that's the point. I mean, you know, I mean, getting back to the show, I mean, is it trying to say concentrated power is a bad thing? That's really hard to say, because at times they seem to say that, I don't know, because basically all they've done is they've taken the concentration of power and just moved it. It's now moved from Yggdrasil to the riders now.
Right.
And that's not been commented upon at all, really, because seemingly Yggdrasil is still evil on the riders, because, you know, Rioma is now the embodiment of Yggdrasil, essentially. And so now he's still seemingly portrayed as at least ambiguous, if not evil. And then you've got on the other side of that, you've got all the kind of all the riders who are incredibly powerful and have all the power of the city, or all the power of at least the citizenry anyway. And that sort of isn't, and that's not seen, and it's not like they're completely failing to do anything productive, at least in the last couple of episodes anyway. So I don't know. It's a very hard one to say whether that's what the show actually thinks. I mean, it's very hard to tell what the show thinks at all in general, but, you know, that's kind of, that's difficult.
And to, you know, bring God into this, like, it almost seems like Rusho is saying that Kota will become the god of the next world because he will be removed from it and outside of it and unable to interact with it in some ways.
Yeah.
But of course, like, overseeing it, which is basically, I think, the understanding that people generally have in the Judeo-Christian concept of God. And it's interesting to me because it almost seems like the show and right away are framing that as a punishment and as suffering that he'll have to undergo. And at the same time, right away is trying to get him to join the overlords. And I don't even know what right away wants him to do, to wipe out humanity because they'll hate him afterwards.
Yeah. But I think if you frame that to Kota, it's like, you know, do you want to save everybody and at some cost, you know, at some cost to yourself? Because, it would seemingly be a very selfish character that would turn around and say, no, I don't want to save the world because I'm going to suffer in some way. I don't know, is that selfish? I don't know whether that would be perceived as a selfish action. I assume it would be.
I would think so, but I would say for sure it's a selfless action to go the opposite way.
Yeah. So, and that's seemingly, I mean, Coach has done so much for others, you know, so much for other people that, you know, you'd think. But then, I don't know, are they trying to set him up for this kind of, you know, this bout of selfishness that seems completely unrelated to anything? I agree, it's very unclear what Red Away actually wants him to do. And why is becoming that kind of detached from the world a punishment? Because that implies that Red Away thinks that he's really, that all he cares about is renown in some respects and kind of being noticed. I mean, that's what I found interesting about the whole kind of dream sequence, was that he's allowed to exist there, but people are scared of him, and he's not getting the love or whatever, you know, from people he wants to attain it from, and that's the horror he sees. So, but then does that mean that Redaway thinks he's incredibly selfish, which again is not borne out by any of his actions at all?
And if Redaway is so clever, how has she not
picked that? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Gleaned that from watching him.
Yeah, because she's seen a lot of what he does. It's like, you know, I mean, maybe. it just seems a very odd choice to offer him that bait, because he doesn't have, he's not shown anything like that, you know, any bent towards, you know, kind of wanting affection, or just wanting to get, you know, get, be noticed or be somebody, or, you know, he's even from his setup, he's not about being famous, or he's not going for the famous route, the celebrity culture thing. It's not making a commentary on that, but because we've never even seen that. Even when he got the Gain belt, he didn't want to use it. You know, he didn't go off and kind of become a TV star. You know, he just used it to make his jobs easier, or, you know, more fun. It's just was hilarious. But, you know, but it just seems very, very odd that that's the kind of route they're going for now, or seemingly. Unless I've completely misunderstood what they were doing, which is highly possible.
Yeah, I'm not sure. What about the... did it almost seem as if right away was implying that the mere fact that he's going to become an overlord is going to make him evil or bad? Because right away and Rushuo and all the others seem to have free will, so why would it be removed from Kota for turning into an overlord? I mean, did you see that, or am I off base?
No, I don't think you're off base. I do think that I didn't think of that at the time, but now you say it, it does come to mind. It is odd, because why would he have his autonomy removed? It does seem very, very strange as to why, perhaps Redoue, but I don't know, maybe it's just a misjudgment. Maybe we as an audience are supposed to sit there and kind of think, oh, you know, well, you know, if that happened to me, how terrible could it be that my family wouldn't recognize me, and, you know, and I couldn't help hurting people, even if, you know, even if I was only close. That was the one thing I did like, actually, was that even though Kota was a monster, he couldn't help hurting people. That was the kind of really, it didn't fit, but it was a really kind of fit. It was a really kind of interesting way to frame the whole question in terms of kind of, you know, what do you do in this situation? Because you really have nothing, because you can't even interact with the people that you love, because you'll just kill them.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, in terms of framing the question, I thought it was a very, very good way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but what does it mean? What does it say?
Exactly.
Like it's, you just said, that is the issue.
You know, it's like, you know, why? I mean, there's a lot of my things in there is just questions. It's sort of like, you know, why is this happening? Why that? Why, you know, you're just like... And if the main... Like, I wouldn't mind necessarily having side questions if the main idea was clear enough, but it really isn't. It's kind of like, are you doing a temptation narrative? Are you doing a sort of journey of a hero overcoming adversity narrative? Are you doing kind of shonen, I'll rise up beyond my afflictions and beat you? Like, you know, it's kind of... It's just like, you can't just throw this many things in and kind of be like, oh, it'll mean something eventually. It's like...
Yeah, no, those are good points. I mean, I resorted to calling it Kota's bogus journey, and I just it's just so frustrating and nebulous as to what the point is, that I don't even know. I mean, I have a bunch of questions just like you do, and it's we've kind of addressed some of them already.
Yeah,
but here's an unconventional weird one. Well, two things is like, is it bad to be God? Is that what Urobuchi's saying? And is he a like ardent man of faith who's frustrated that everybody like lives their lives hedonistically, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, is he mad at people for not recognizing like the blessings of God or the divine or something? I mean, no, I mean, right?
Is,
I mean,
arguably not, but I mean, is it, if you're going to frame the question, is it bad to be God? I mean, that's a kind of in a show. I mean, you know, what is, I mean, what is that even? that has no bearing on anything.
Yeah, how does that apply to any of our lives?
Exactly,
right?
Because you can't. Because, you know, I mean, whether you believe God exists or not, it, the deification of a human being is. I have no idea that, you know, like,
yeah,
that just goes beyond anything. You know, it's like, what is that? I just don't know.
Yeah, at the conclusion,
explode.
at the conclusion, the only thing I could glean from this is maybe the message is do the right thing regardless of how people will think of you.
Yeah, I really want to believe that that's what they're going for, because that is a good, because, you know, that is a good message as messages go. You know, if you're a kid and you're thinking, you know, there's, you know, but it's not even set up as like, oh, there's the kind of, I could do the right thing, or I could do the wrong thing and that'll get me short-term gain, because that's how usually these messages are obviously set up. It's like, it's short-term gain versus the long-term. But here it's just kind of like, do you want to be blatantly evil or blatantly sacrificial? I'm like, surely there's... Surely, you know, you can't... The world isn't that black and white. Surely, you know, surely that's the whole point of the show, is that to say, actually, you know, there's way more than... You know, it's basically you're either stupid or evil. That's the basic choice they're giving you. And I'm like, that's a horrible message, if nothing else. You know, it just doesn't make any... You know, it's like, you know, you're either incredibly evil and, you know, or you're completely sacrificial and give yourself up. And obviously, because we live in an individualistic culture, that's a bad thing.
Right.
It's just frustrating. Because I really want this to have like all this, all the way through this episode, you're kind of thinking maybe they're building to some conclusion that actually there's gonna be more to it. But they get to the end and kind of Kota comes back and he's like, oh, I have more resolve now. But for no real reason. It's just kind of, you know, it's almost like kind of in Final Fantasy VII when Cloud comes out of a live stream and he's like, oh, I'm really buoyed up now because I know who I am, I've sorted out my identity, and now I'm secure in who I am, I can go on and do the things I have to do because I know who I am now. But it's like, but Kota wasn't worried about that, so therefore this whole journey doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah, it's really weird. I don't know.
I would have loved to have Aelith here to see what he thought. I would have been really intrigued by what he thought about the whole thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's going to be globetrotting right now, so...
Oh, well, it's all right for some, isn't it?
Or sometime soon, so... Do you want to continue with your point about Coda's vision of hell?
Just let me reread what I wrote to make sure that I know what I'm doing. It kind of doesn't... Again, I think it's kind of similar to what I've already been saying, but, I mean, you know, Coda's vision of hell is himself being unappreciated, almost, because I guess... Because it seems that the future that he's looking at is a future where he presumably saves everybody, but then comes back and then everyone's just kind of living their normal lives. So he's living in this situation, but I think kind of Urobuchi just froze, he's kind of just like throwing everything out of proportion because he's kind of envisioning this society that's so xenophobic. It just doesn't even, you know, it doesn't even want to accept it. I don't know. It's very strange that he's thrown it. I mean, it seems kind of Dark Knight-esque where Joker kind of has no hope in humanity either, and then, you know, kind of goes out to prove him wrong. But it's just very, very odd that this is the route they're going down, because this vision of hell kind of I just don't think it would happen. I mean, you know, if Coda's going to come back and be so powerful, you know, because if, as your point says, he's going to be somehow removed from the world as a whole, then this vision of hell doesn't even make any sense because he's still interacting with it. If anything, he makes it worse, which he couldn't do if he was removed because he would only make it, you know, he couldn't affect it in a way that would directly affect him. But then if he's in, but then if he's going to be part of it, then surely people would notice, and surely his appearance is the least of his problems. But I don't know. It doesn't seem to be able to commit to one or the other as to what's actually going to happen to him. It's just kind of like, oh, maybe vaguely in the future bad things might happen, but we won't tell you exactly what they are because reasons.
Yeah, because we won't.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's strange. We need to finish up here, so I think we'll just go through these last few notes, and then I think we want feedback because I think we raised a lot of good questions here, maybe.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to hear people's reactions to our philosophizing, I guess. but anyway, kind of my final note is I suppose I'm glad that Kota is there, but I agree with Mai. He has been like the selfless person the entire time.
Yeah.
And so anyway, him being there, you know, in this dream world where he's being tempted or whatever, but he's just proving himself and, you know, that he is this selfless person. Again and again, he's showed this. What I'm saying is I may not have liked the show at certain points and Kota for being written as so dull or dim, whatever you want to say. But I have mostly always thought of him as good-natured, especially after the first arc was over. I don't think there has been any doubt. Has there been?
Not in any prolonged way. I mean, there's been a couple of moments where you kind of think that's probably not what a selfless person would do. Like, especially when he takes on all the Kurokages to destroy the whatever the system's called that they have that's going to destroy
that's
everybody.
The scalar system.
The scalar system, yeah. Because the vector system would have too many directions. I don't know, but anyway. But I hate names and they just don't make any sense.
The scalar system only has one direction.
Yes. Death, yeah. Right? Yeah. That's exactly what Sengoku Ryoma would do. But it's just. But yeah. So I mean, I don't think there's not really been any. There's not really been ever in any doubt. It's not like they've kind of taken him on this kind of. If after he'd found out that Yuya had been turned into an inverse. If he'd gone on this kind of all-out crazy, I'm going to kill every inverse because, you know, like Eren, in Attack on Titan, if he'd gone on a kind of, you know, I'm going to kill all the Titans because they killed my friend, you know, that kind of thing, and negated the fact that he'd actually been the one responsible, then I could see this working because actually then you've got a character who is directing his anger in the wrong place and actually isn't confronting the issue that's central to this, which is actually that he was the one who acted without, you know... And then you could go on and be at the argument, well, you know, what choice did he have? Because he was going to kill him anyway, and he wasn't really Yuya anymore. But, you know, if he'd taken that kind of route and gone, right, I'm going to kill all of Helheim, and I don't care who gets in my way, and, you know, and it ended up at a point where Kota was like, okay, I'm going to, I have to kill my friends, or, you know, sort of something like that. You know, he puts his friends in danger just for the sake of his vision. Then that would be, you know, then this would make sense, because then they're kind of saying... Well, you know, you're already pretty much like this. This isn't that much of a stretch. But the way they've done it now, they're like, actually, this is, you know, to talk about Kota in that way is a massive stretch from where he is as a character now. Especially when he comes back, he seems kind of really like, you know, dead set and, you know, kind of like, yeah, I'm going to go on and do this now. Almost like Kaito in some respects. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. It just, this... The whole thing of this episode seems to be, it's a good idea for an episode, but for a character who's in a different place.
Actually, let me pause you right there.
Yeah.
This is a great episode for Yoda in the Clone Wars Season 6 on Netflix, which it's not just on Netflix anymore, but he goes through this temptation thing, and it really works well, because he goes on like this vision quest sort of thing, and that works really well for his character, as someone who has seen all 6 movies a bunch of times, and... like whatever I can tell you, they do a really good job, growing his character and stretching him and showing him overcome, temptation and like his own selfish desires for the good of, the galaxy and others in general.
But of course that starts from the premise that he has those desires within, or you've seen those desires within him before. So, you know, as a character.
Right.
Whereas
right.
in this, like, with Kota, there's, like, what selfish desires does he have to overcome? This is the thing. It's, like, he's almost been set up too well in the sense that his flaws aren't well developed. You can kind of be like, what flaws does he actually have to overcome? Apart from the fact that he's trusting to a, you know, to a man, which is kind of a bit ridiculous and is kind of a, also a dramatic irony to allow the plot to continue, which, okay, I'll forgive them for some things, but... You know, like in other respects, you're kind of like, what really does Kota, you know, what if he was placed into this vision quest type thing, what would he actually have to overcome? Because it sure as heck isn't, oh, I'm going to take this power and become an evil benevolent, you know, sorry, become an evil, you know, become an evil overlord type thing.
Yeah.
It's definitely not that. That's Kaito's vision quest, if anything. Should be him doing it. You know,
yeah, ironically, maybe this should have been Kaito and maybe Kota should have had the soccer episode.
Yes, that probably would have made more sense. Like this with Kaito would have been a really, really interesting episode, because then when Red, you know, I mean, I can already imagine how it would have gone down, but, you know, because he would have at the end turned around and gone like, yes, but, you know, to be the most powerful means it doesn't matter. But you know, to present him with his choice was actually like, this is where you're going to end up. But like, and it's the thing, for Kaito, it just seems really weird. It's like, when has he ever been like this? You know, except, you know, and it's going to be very interesting to see next episode with how this affects him, because. That will have some bearing surely that would have some bearing on his character before, because if this now makes him really, really driven, then surely he was holding back before for some reason. You know, it's like, you know, I don't know. It just kind of seems.
I have a prediction.
Oh God.
He's going to wipe out a bunch of people.
Okay.
As a
kind of secondary effect of something that he does, or
no, not necessarily that. More as a callback, backshadowing, whatever, or the incident with the scalar system was foreshadowing to this, where he increases his power dramatically again, but now he has the resolve, which is what happened. He gained the resolve, then he used Kachidoki and wiped out all those Kurikages. Somehow, I think, and not because I want this to happen or I think it's right for the story, but because I think this is what Urobuchi and the creative team want for some strange reason, he's going to use his massive power to wipe out some. So either Redaway or some other overlord is getting taken off the board, or he's just going to like savage through some people. That just,
I mean, the thing, because the thing for his character, the thing would be to get all the way to the point at which he could do that and then turn around and say, well, but actually there's a better way. That's his character in a nutshell, I think.
Yeah.
Is, you know, he gets to the point. It's like with Luke and Vader in Return of the Jedi. He fights him, he beats him, but he doesn't then kill him. You know, that's the, he turns around and says, you know, there's a better way than that. I don't.
Yeah, no.
You know, that's the
point.
You're
absolutely right on that.
You know, he says, you know, that's the whole journey of the hero thing, is to turn around and say, actually, justice is different to what you're trying to get me to do, and I'm not going to play your game anymore. And that's surely Kota's character, and that's what he should be doing. But I don't want it to get to the point where he's like, oh, therefore I'm all powerful. What I really don't want to do is to send him on this kind of mad, I'm power crazy binge for 6 more episodes, and then the final 2 episodes him to try and redeem himself, because that just eliminates everything they've been trying to do with him for the past 40 episodes. If they do that, I'm not going to be happy in the slightest. Because that's just a complete betrayal of him as a character, in my opinion. So I really hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, me too. And we'll just have to see what happens. The show is ending in September. We don't know when specifically, but
so what would that give us, like, in terms of, so we got like 2 more weeks of this month, and then
I think there's 1 week it will be off, so it could be 5 more episodes. It looks like.
Okay, so we're gonna we're gonna end up like 45, 46 maybe, depends on.
Yeah,
like depends on when in September it ends, but yeah, like,
right.
Yeah, so I really hope they don't do the whole, for 4 episodes we're going to take him on this crazy power trip, and then he's going to do a heel face turn in the final episode and be like, oh, I can save everybody. Like, it just, because that's just not, like, that. This vision does not necessitate that. I'm pretty ranting now, but if they presented him with kind of, you know, you can bring everybody back, but you have to do these, you know, if they'd given him a choice where it was kind of like, you can have everything you want, but you have to do this. But they didn't. They just kind of said, you know, they presented him with the choice from the point of view of, if you don't do, you know, if you don't do this, harm is going to come to you. Whereas they didn't present him with a choice in the way they should have done, which was, if you do this, you can save other people. Because surely that's the way to tempt him to do things, is to present it in a selfless way. Or so you'd think. But yeah, that's kind of me philosophizing again.
No, you would think, but for some reason it's just not going there.
No,
all right, well, I think before we both start ranting too much and get super redundant, we should probably call it at this
point.
Yes,
we should.
It's been fun, though, discussing it. I mean, as much of a headache as it's been.
Yeah, I think, I really think at the end of the series I'm going to go back and try and marathon the whole thing and see if I get anything different out of the series, because I really, like, there's a part of me that wants to believe there's something I'm just missing in this, but like, it's probably a part of me that kind of goes, nah, there's just nothing. Like, I don't know.
I think you need to accept the possibility that some of the fandom is just wrong about the show. I hate to say it, but I mean, and of course it's opinion.
You were rewatching Forza, are you?
I just started. I finished Kiva up first, and I loved the ending. It was fantastic. And then I just started rewatching Forza, and also within minutes I was hooked, and I actually ended up writing like a ton of stuff. Like, I'm trying to keep everything trimmed for the presentation for both the people contributing to the episodes where we discuss the shows in depth, and for the listeners, so they don't have to listen to 16 hours, because I think we've done like 16 or 20 hours on Kiva now.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's a little excessive. I think somewhere around 10 to 12 is probably enough for a series.
Yeah, for a series.
I mean,
a third of the way through, and is exquisite. Like, I really do. It's possibly my favorite writer series I've ever seen. Even better than Baps than Cougar. I'm kind of, you know, from what I've seen of it, I'm like, I tell you for why. It's not because Godai is bad. Like, Cougar is amazing, and Cougar is exceptionally well plotted. Forze has characters in spades. And I love that.
Yeah, it's cool. There were some complaints I had towards the end of the series with originally watching it through, but just in the first episode, I've seen things that corrected and nullified my ability to be angry at those things. So if you keep them in mind, or if you are able to watch it quickly,
I'm just saying, you know, based on what I've seen, I'm not saying it is better than Cougar. You know, having seen both, because I've not seen both series completely, but I'm saying from what I've seen, Forze just has a warmth to it, and it's just so refreshing to see something where actually they go, yes, bad things do happen, but life is worth living.
Yes.
because especially because it's kind of high school and growing up and that kind of thing, it just really appeals to me in so many respects. It's such listen to when we talk about Forze, because it'll be amazing.
It will be
shameless plug.
And that should be coming within like 3 weeks, because we have commentaries that we're sitting on right now and topical issues, so we'll get it all out at some point.
That's great. No, I am really looking forward to the Forze thing. Ever since I started rewatching it, I was like, I can't wait. It's talking about Forze, it's gonna be amazing. So you know, I'm proper like fanboying over here, but it's cool.
it's really great. I was I even thought about like, I'll listen to it while I'm doing stuff, even though I have no idea what's going on, just because like the background and the ambiance and everything is so great. Anyway. Sorry, goodbye everybody. Thank you for listening.
It's been great.
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncomcastrx@gmail.com or contact us via Twitter @needsmorealeph, @gomasq, @illustratorclaire, @nejirayon, @professorwhat, @sonyyourface, @where'smyhenchman. On behalf of everyone, this is Amit saying we hope you have enjoyed this dose of The Cure for the Common Writer Show. I run the show's Twitter feed @UncommonRx, as well as the Toll Network feed @TrialofHeroes, where you can keep up to date on all our shows, including Moonspeak, a bi-monthly Sailor Moon Crystal show discussing the ongoing series. Subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, your favorite RSS reader, or visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com to get it all.